that there is no other way at all. There is the only way to develop understanding by studying, hearing, discussing, considering, contemplating, and also awareness.
Can we say that the most useful thing to discuss and consider are the realities?
To have more understanding, because awareness can just be aware. It cannot understand. So when there is more and more understanding, and when there is awareness, there is condition for understanding to understand reality perfectly, little by little, until it grows.
When you say awareness, I guess you mean sati. Yeah, sati doesn't understand, but when it's associated with panya.
Panya is that which understands. Sati never understands.
Can people without understanding have sati? Sati can associate with reality. Sati can
arise with any kusala or sopana citta, even without panya. But when we talk about the development of right understanding, it doesn't mean that awareness can understand. Awareness is awareness. It's always just awareness of different levels.
Contacted a reality. Okay. Assisted by Pasa. Assisted by Pasa.
Pasa contact.
Pasa contacts. And Sati is in that same group of Chittasik, is it?
Sati is aware of the object which is contacted.
Okay. Can Sati be aware of an object, a reality, a Dhamma or a Rupa without Panya being associated with it?
Sati can arise when there is anasila without panya.
Okay, so there can also be sati that is aware of a reality
without panya. You said
without panya.
Aware of giving, not aware of reality.
Not aware of reality.
Yeah.
Must be supported by
different level.
Oh, okay.
Understanding at the level of generosity.
It's talking about equalizing faith with understanding and of concentration with energy. One of strong faith and little understanding is foolishly trustful and trusts without good grounds. But one of strong understanding and little faith partakes of craftiness and is incurable like a disease caused by medicine. This one thinking, profitable karma comes about by the mere entertaining of thought. He goes too far, and through not performing meritorious deeds by way of gifts, etc., he re-arises in hell. So someone with good understanding thinks, well, even thinking about giving a gift is in itself a good thought. Why not just have those good thoughts? Why bother going further? You know, why bother myself by actually giving? A little bit dangerous. I probably have those tendencies myself to think in that way at times. Anything you can comment on there? Can suggest?
That is still you who is selecting whether what kind of kusala you'd like to have.
Uh-huh.
But when it's nama and rupa, it's conditioned. Time for dana, time for sila, time for whatever conditioned. Yeah, not you who is selecting.
So this one of strong wisdom is still not the strong, very, very strong wisdom type. It's just a certain level of wisdom.
Right, yeah.
Not balanced. Not balanced.
Yeah. Can that apply to some of the highly developed panya also, or is it?
Yeah, because in terms of absolute reality, there is no body, no self at all. Only a reality arising by conditions and passing away rapidly. So there is no time to think who I, only avijja, doesn't see realities as they are.
Understanding.
I know this is something that's come up before in discussions. What do they mean here by talking about balancing faith and understanding?
Well, faith should be strong and understanding should be strong.
But if understanding is strong, then faith or sadha is strong anyway without having to think about balance or...
We don't have to think about it. It's there.
It's there anyway. No need to think about balance. Or...
Because it's not balanced. So we don't have to think that it's not balanced.
No. This is a passage people commonly read and misunderstand and have the idea that they will develop the understanding.
That's why without understanding of reality, people read with ignorance.
Yeah. It's worse than useless.
And get wrong idea. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, why those who have a very well knowledge about Abhidhamma still can practice wrongly?
Yeah, because they don't understand.
They
really
talk about citta, jetasika, not self, different kind of realities, but still they're doing something which is
they read something else and they don't bring the knowledge of citta and jetasika to bear on the sutra.
We were talking earlier about people who are academics and they have their meditation practice. If there is any bridging, it's sort of trying to balance the sadha or trying to experience the feelings, or so they take aspects and
I remember a monk telling me once in his meditation is said that wasn't balanced in this meditation. Tana Sutta here says, for lust is abandoned in one who acquires the tenfold sign of the fowl, who develops it, whose sense doors are closed as regards the faculties, and also in one who knows the right amount of eating.
Right amount
in eating. Through the practice of maintaining himself by drinking water when there is still room for 4 or 5 lumps of food. Okay, so it seems to indicate the one thing that assists eliminating lust is to be careful with your food, not overeat. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that it would have emphasized eating at all? Isn't it up to oneself how much one eats? If one wants to eat a lot, well, it's one's nature to eat a lot.
But can't we eliminate lust?
It's a support. It assists.
One can see just a conventional sense if one overeats or one becomes obsessed with food, then it's harder to study, it's harder to listen, it's harder to apply oneself. All one does is think about food. But of course we know, in terms of developing the right understanding, that whatever one's accumulation, it doesn't mean that it's attachment, it's lobha, just like other things. So attachment or lobha, sometimes people think, oh well, the food is because you've got to eat, but no, it's attachment. When one minds what one eats and one thinks about it and one overeats, but there's no reason why understanding can't develop at those times as well. But just on a conventional level, I would say that for me personally, it's not helpful to overeat or to think too much about food. What do you think?
Is this for monks or lay people?
If it's for monks,
this is for monks, but I think all of the Satipatthana Sutta and all of the scriptures are also, in a sense, for lay people as well. You know,
sometimes there are particular considerations.
If it's a particular consideration for the monk, I mean, the monk is meant to be the one who eats whatever is given and has no, doesn't select. And
yeah, that might be a factor.
You know, there are various.
Also, there are certain rules that help to sustain the monk's life.
Right.
Obviously, I'm not a threat to properly living a lay life.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that might be a factor then too. Yeah. For lust is abandoned in one who acquires the tenfold sign of the fowl, who develops it, and whose sense doors are closed as regards the faculties. I think that means Indriya Sambarasila. And also in one who knows the right amount of eating, through the practice of maintaining himself by drinking water when there is still room for 4 or 5 lumps of food. Hence, it was said, he should drink water while there's room for 4 or 5 more lumps of food. The bhikkhu who is strenuous finds this enough for happiness.
I think it's also just helping to indicate that you don't have to eat until you're full. In terms of food, is that something less than fullness?
Right.
Are you monk as well when you develop Satipatthana?
Yes.
Yes. That monk.
Yeah. So those who develop Satipatthana is considered as monk as well. And one should know the purpose of eating.
To sustain the body.
That's all.
Yeah.
If one has such a purpose to develop Satipatthana by being a monk, that should be the first goal. Not to be indulged in food, and so it will lead to indulge in everything.
I certainly find when I overeat, periods of my life when I overeat, somehow it's just feel more heavy, more lethargic, you know, a lot of negative things. But if periods where I don't overeat, seem to have more energy and so forth, seem beneficial. Just in a conventional sense, it seems beneficial.
One forgets about the purpose of eating.
To keep the body.
Yeah, that's all.
Just as medicine. Yeah.
By keeping on that purpose, one knows the purpose too, that
right.
Just need for developing.
So it helps one understand the meaning of moderation. Because one needs to be moderate.
Just for the purpose of being able to develop, like using rope and things, like everything monk has to consider in order not to forget about his purpose.
I think one should also bear the same thing in mind about exercise too. The purpose of exercise should just be to maintain the body to a degree that is sufficient for ease of living.
We have an enormous amount of attachment in any way, and we do tend to exercise sometimes to make the body more attractive or something. I mean, by conditions we have these sort of defilements, and I think it would be trying to be ideal if we always exercise just for the aim, but trying not to think about making the body more attractive.
There are two kinds of living, monk's life and
lay people.
Yeah,
there's lay people.
Yeah.
You could also say the reason why we are lay people and not monks.
Because of our
tendencies. Don't have the accumulations to lead a good monk's life.
Do you monk in a future life, Jonathan?
Not particularly. No, I can't say there's anything I particularly find myself thinking about. Or I do feel that in the right time and place, I would probably join the monk.
It's an ideal life, but it depends on whether you have enough virtues to live like that, even in Buddha's time.
Right. On the other hand, it must be easier to live the monk's life in times when the monkhood itself is of a high standing and good vinaya and
good understanding,
opportunities also for the teaching. Because nowadays, if you're in the monkhood, there are not so many opportunities to hear a good proper Dhamma.
Oh, they can still study the Tipitaka. I mean, most monks would have an opportunity to study the Tipitaka.
they couldn't be sitting here having this discussion.
But they can listen to the radio.
They have opportunity, but it depends whether they would or not.
But also, you can question whether there's good support if you come and speak to your fellow monks about the Dhamma.
They're quite good on Abhidharma, and in fact, in many ways, if you looked at everything around the world, they're probably the closest to right practice and right view, apart from right practice.
It's dangerous.
Because it's the best. Because it's the counterfeit, most closest counterfeit.
It's the most dangerous when it's the closest. Because people will be misled. Yeah.
People who, like, for example, someone like you who is sincerely interested and they know that this woman is just sitting meditation and they study the scriptures, so it's very convincing.
Here's something that doesn't support what Kunchua says, you know, how...
That's why they fight with the daily practice.
What do you mean, fight?
They disagree with our daily practice.
They fight about the daily practice.
One cannot have sati while one is driving.
That's pretty foolish of
them. And people believe because it sounds like that, because they have studied a lot. But when we point out all the details, they cannot say anything. They just cannot find out the reality of Rup Nang, sitting posture.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
Yeah. So they say that, not necessary to have any characteristic. Just understand that it's rupa without any characteristic appearing. And one would say that, it's vikara rupa. But vikara rupa is not that which can be the object of understanding apart from the four primary rupas.
Yes, before I mentioned, that was my big problem with them, and I really looked into Abhidharma about the vikara rupas and all the subtle rupas, and I couldn't see what sitting rupa was that they were talking about.
Vikara rupa is not sitting posture at all.
But here's an interesting thing. In the conclusion to the classification of the foundation of mindfulness, page 351. So as regards these four foundations of mindfulness, in the prior stage, they are obtained in different conscious moments. For by one consciousness only, he lays hold of the body. By another feelings, by another mind, by another he lays hold of mental objects. Which, when they say consciousness, they mean, when they say body, they mean kaya, satipatthana, another vedana satipatthana, citta nupassana, and dharma nupassana. So it's saying that in a series, someone can be developing satipatthana, and one moment there's awareness of feelings, the next moment dharma nupassana, next moment citta nupassana. And yet, this practice that we're talking about now, the other...
But no rule.
But some people say there is a rule.
Because they don't understand. Because they don't understand that there is no rule.
No.
Sati is anatta.
That's right, and that's what it's exactly what it's basically saying. Yeah. Very important to realise that too. Otherwise, people will try to concentrate on one object continually.
Like selecting an object.
So the question, like you said to me about Mount's cousin's group, you know, who have the study the Abhidharma theory, and then but then have their different sitting meditation practice. So what is the purpose of those studies? So it's the same with Ajahn Nev's group. What is the purpose of the study? Because their idea of practice is something
useless
separate.
To study.
Well, actually, a lot of them do neglect study now because they think the practice is more important than the study is.
At Wat Bun Kanchana?
Yes, they definitely try to emphasize
because
practice over study.
They cling to the practice, so they don't think that it should be.
It's natural, isn't it? Because if you think this is the practice and this is the important thing, what would be the purpose of the study?
Yeah.
So they don't study now.
And this will happen anyway.
They don't encourage that much study now. Just enough to understand the practice properly.
I see. But how can there be the understanding of the study considering?
Once there's enough, anymore, just practice.
They don't understand the meaning of bhavana. When it's not the closest one, people can see that it's not the right one. But when it's so close, very close, people cannot tell if they don't have the real understanding of realities.
Like in this practice we're talking about, it seems quite close.
Yeah.
You must have been considered very disrespectful when you
I don't mind.
Started.
Yeah. Because what should I pay respect to if it's not the three gems? Yeah.
They do say Kuchijin is right in theory.
In theory.
In theory.
Yeah.
They say
right in theory.
Your theory
and
is right, but practice is a bit different from theory. That's
yeah.
What I mean.
Yeah. Like driving and they can be aware.
In theory, I think they think that is right, but in practice, no.
Tell me what's wrong, if they can tell. Because
you drive off the road, you achieve the person in Yana.
What about the...
You get enlightened at the wrong moment.
What about the sati is aware now? Is it right or wrong? Because
well,
they see...
Right.
Yeah, see, tell us them back. So what could they say that the practice is wrong?
Yeah.
What is wrong? Because they can be aware of anything at any time because there is seeing. Shouldn't there be awareness?
Well, Jonathan and Sarah here, should we drive on down to Pattaya, tell a driver to carry on to Pattaya and we'll go and see.
Is that where the temple is?
Yeah.
For people who have studied and considered so much and know more Abhidharma detail than we will ever know, is it just because of strong cling to self that matters?
They cling to Ajahn. So they have disciples still cling to the practice, to the system, to the method. Okay. And they set up many meditation centers following the same path. And some said that they had attained Uttiyapiya Yana, but they couldn't go on further.
Yeah.
Just there.
Why did I say that?
But ask them whether they can understand reality of this moment. Like seeing now, can there be awareness? Can there be right understanding? If they can't, how can they attain such stage? Uttiyapiya Yana, the fourth stage of Vipassana Yana. Yeah. And what prevents them to understand, to have this kind of understanding? Can those disciples understand, no matter this time or previous?
What happens when you speak to them, like you mentioned the old...
They listen to my radio program. They have opportunity to listen carefully if they'd like to, because we have tape. They can play it on and on, backward, rewind, yeah? And what they say is that, all right, I'm right, but for their practice, it's the first stage, like preparatory school.
Their practice is the first stage.
It's like preparatory school for higher understanding of Vipassana in daily life. Because now they cannot deny. Yeah. But they say that is like kindergarten.
Yes, their practice.
Prepare
you
for...
Get to the first stage of Vipassana and then you...
No, not first stage. Like you go to the kindergarten first and then you go to the primary school later.
This is what many groups of study Abhidharma say.
Go again and ask again whether they change their opinion.
Maybe I'll go down tomorrow. See what they're up to. I haven't seen them for 3 years.
The difference between seeing here or there. Yeah.
They don't really think seeing is very useful. They think being aware is
like... Oh, I see. Just Rupna.
Even though they talk about it in the...
Teaching like this in the Tipitaka or commentary?
Well, I take it from this.
Who's he? Is there he? And what is the characteristic of Rupa which appears to see the anattaness? I respect my teacher very much, but I cannot follow the wrong path.
So I love to say this here also, just believe him in the front.
But they don't come. They don't want. Yeah.
Yeah. We could go down there, but no, I don't think that costs.
You know, Ajahn Nair Foundation.
Yeah.
run by one of Ajahn Nath's disciples, whose name is Ajahn Wanasit.
I've heard of her, yes.
Kun Dung Den sent him a tape, one or two, I'm not sure, about the explanation on the Kayanupasana Sipatthana, especially on the Iriyapatabhapa, for as a gift for New Year. The benefit of having sati now is right or wrong, if it benefit or not to have awareness now, to be aware. I don't ask about difficult. Is it useful, beneficial?
Well, they will say yes, of course.
So why not?
They will say it's difficult.
Difficult, develop it until it becomes easier, easier. Because if one said it's difficult, it's always difficult.
Well, they will say their practice makes it a bit little and easier. That's what they will
impossible.
Say.
So you can feel it. And also the other minor akusala dhamma, which arise with vayapata or dosa, like kukuccha too.
Okay, so you can understand more than just dosa by knowing.
Dosa can be kilesa and nivarana dhamma. See, but when we don't talk about the minor kilesa which follow the main one like dosa, see, kukuccha cannot arise without vayapata or dosa.
Yeah, right.
So when we just talk about the main akusala dhamma, like kilesa, we don't include the minor one which follow.
Why do we need to know about the minor one?
It arises
as
nivarana dhamma. Yeah. It hinders the growth of kusala dhamma.
So it's good to have knowledge of it so there can be understanding of it.
To understand each different function between Nivarana Dhamma and Kilesa and Asava and Upadana.
They have different functions and different
characteristic or responsibility of function there. See, even they are dosa, but they are different group, different class.
Here's a question you're thinking about.
Dress that you one dislike.
Yeah, but they're quite different. Even though they're both, we can see there's both aversion, they're both, they're quite different. Different realities, really.
Yeah.
What's the classified as in Pali? Is it a chitta seeker or just dosa? Can you say fear? Fear is different, even though there's both dislike of the object, fear and anger, there's still a difference.
Is there any aspect of the Dharma you've been considering in particular, or with your illness, anything that particularly became more apparent, or anything you realized?
I've been thinking a lot about death.
Good. That's a good topic.
And what in particular about death?
I mean, death can there are classified to many ways, like samudhi morada.
Conventional death.
Yes, conventional death. And then samucheta morada. Like the Buddha, yes.
Parinibbana.
Yeah,
Parinibbana. Right, final dying.
Panika Marana.
Momentary death.
So each moment, just passed by, that's Panika Marana. But when I was ill, I thought a lot about Samuti Marana, conventional Marana death. Then it brings me to think about Panika Marana.
Yes.
Be aware of Sati. That can help you. Why in this world, anything else?
And how does Kanika Marana sati help you considering momentary death?
Anicca.
Kanika marana.
Kanika marana. Like,
that's the momentary moment.
You're aware you have sati.
Okay.
You'll be aware of where kanika marana.
Right. How do you contemplate just by having sati, just by awareness, you mean?
Yes. I don't mean contemplate. I don't mean consideration.
Oh, okay. Do you think it's fearful to think about death?
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes dosa arise.
Why does dosa arise?
Just fear.
Why?
Fear of departure.
Yeah, because I think of the clinging to self.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Clinging to things.
So, when there's fear of death, it's like a red flag to say it's also clinging to self. So, if you want to eliminate the fear of death, the only way is to eliminate the wrong view of self.
That's it.
Yeah.
See, it's just develop something.
And so develop.
Panya.
Understand nama and rupa and so on.
Yeah. Either you or Kunso Chin told me when you were sick that it made you realize before that some things you had been considering or understanding incorrectly, and when you were sick you started to reconsider the dharma in a
yes.
new way. Can
yes.
you explain this?
Difficult question to ask, yes.
You have to feel it yourself. It goes step by step, gradually. It doesn't come.
Okay, but it is owing to not keeping what in mind, owing to non-penetration of what, and owing to concealment by what, that these characteristics do not appear. Firstly, the characteristic of impermanence does not appear owing to not keeping in mind, not penetrating rise and fall, owing to its being concealed by continuity, santati. The characteristic of pain does not appear owing to not keeping in mind, not penetrating continuous oppression, and owing to its being concealed by the postures, iriyapatha. Why is perception of pain, the characteristic of pain, concealed by the postures? The characteristic of pain means dukkha, I guess, characteristic of dukkha. Why do the postures...
What is pain here?
I think pain is dukkha, because it's talking...
And what is dukkha here?
The characteristic of dukkha.
What is that characteristic?
Well, it's mixed in with anicca, dukkha, and anatta.
See, it's the arising and falling away, not the painful feeling.
But the characteristic says first, the characteristic of permanence does not appear owing to not keeping in mind, not penetrating rise and fall. That's anicca. The characteristic of pain, however, does not appeal owing to not
pain
keeping
here
in mind.
Is dukkha, right?
Not yeah, not penetrating continuous oppression, and owing to its being concealed by the postures.
Mm-hmm.
The characteristic of not self does not appear owing to not keeping in mind, not penetrating the resolution into the various elements, jnana, dhatu, minya, vinaya, bhoga, owing to its being concealed by compactness. But when continuity is dissected by laying hold of rise and fall, the characteristic of impermanence appears in accordance with its true essence. When the postures are exposed, ukhatita, by keeping in mind continual oppression, the characteristic of pain appears in accordance with its true essential nature. When resolving of the compact is affected by resolution into the various elements, the characteristic of no self appears in accordance with its true essential nature. I have no problem with the impermanence or the no self, but why are the postures?
And what is the... there are three characteristics.
Yes.
Triple characteristics.
Yes.
So can you say that dukkha here is not the impermanence and anatta?
But they are classifying it slightly different, aren't they?
Yeah. Yes, but the still the dukkha is the unsatisfactoriness of arising and falling away, and thereby it's inherent.
Posture, can you see the dukkha? Can you see the characteristic? The anicchang, dukkhang, anatta. Because dukkhang here concerns with anicchang and anatta, not painful feeling.
Okay.
And if you think that there is a posture, can you see the dukkha? which is the anicchang, dukkhang, anatta of reality.
At the meditation center, they would say that by not changing posture, you experience pain, and that's what it means.
I think that we have to consider what covers the three characteristics. Do you know by the word here?
No.
Yes, it's what covers up the three characteristics.
Yeah, the dukkha one is
the whole, the three, not the only the dukkha.
Well,
what hinder ones to
understand?
For Anicca, not seeing rise and fall.
Of what?
Rise and fall of the nama and rupa.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because the continuity.
Yes, but
so one cannot see the arising and falling of each one.
Yes.
And then it has to be the same characteristic, whether it's nama or rupa. So when it concerns with the posture, it means rupa, right? Because nama doesn't have posture.
Yes.
So what hinder the seeing of...
The characteristic of pain or dukkha does not appear owing to not keeping in mind, not penetrating, continuous oppression, and owing to its being concealed by the postures of the apartheid.
Concealed by posture, right?
Yeah. When the postures are exposed.
Concealing by posture, right?
Yes.
So the posture concealing the nature of reality.
By thinking about posture, it conceals. Mm-hmm. It sounds reasonable. How does the posture conceal? Exactly?
Because once...
Taking the rupas for something.
For example, the book, how can you see the arising and falling away, the dukkha?
The book doesn't have posture.
Okay. This and this. See?
Okay. She stood the book whole, up and laid it down.
Uh-huh. In shape.
It's like this rupa, no matter you lie down or you stand up.
You see it as a whole, so you're not penetrating into the dukkha nature of it.
Yeah.
But you don't think it's got anything to do with feeling painful when you lie down, sit down for a long time?
Yeah, if you go further on, it would say that it seems like the changing of posture conceal the dukkha.
Yes.
Because when you change, you don't see dukkha because you have changed. But actually, the posture itself, not the changing of posture, that conceal.
But why does it say changing? Why can't you separate straight?
Because whatever is dukkha is
dukkha. Also anicca and anatta. But one either understands it via anatta or via anicca
you
or
cannot,
via dukkha.
You cannot see the anicjang and say that is not dukkha.
But the moment of awareness would only penetrate via anicca at that moment.
Yeah, yeah. But it's that very the one which arises and falls away, and anatta, together at that time.
Yeah.
Why do they mention that it's penetrated by one like anicca? Because it seems that the three must go together.
Must go together, but it depends on the accumulation, whether you incline to consider that...
Which aspect.
Yeah. Do you know which aspect you're in, you in particular?
Everyone knows by... oneself. You cannot tell about the other.
But do you know what everyone knows themselves, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I suppose it depends how much understanding you have. If it's very weak, you wouldn't have any
but
of them anyway.
like at any given moment, so it depends on the considering at that moment.
But it does mean that you have to keep on knowing just that.
Yes.
Because when there is right understanding of reality, which is not self, which is nama and rupa, at that moment there is not that level of penetration through the arising and falling.
No.
Even at that moment, reality has to arise and fall away.
Yes.
But
even though it's not understood that it is arising and falling away,
the
still...
understanding is not that level yet. That's why there must be further.
In other words, what is painful is no self. Why? Because there is no exercising power over them. The mode of insusceptibility to having power exercised over them is the characteristic of no self. In other words, the five aggregates are totally beyond control, arise by condition.
Why does he bother to mention changing of postures if it's just the posture itself which is the
Because they don't think that posture itself hinder. They think that the chanting hinder because they think that sitting is so painful.
Yes.
So by chanting, one cannot see the painful feeling of sitting. So one has to feel pain until there is changing.
But why does the Buddha mention change of posture if it's
what
just
the
posture?
Why? Or carefully, the changing of the posture conceal the dukkha.
Yes.
Read carefully.
Well, we haven't got any more of this section.
Over and over again.
Characteristic of pain does not appear owing to not keeping in mind, not penetrating continuous suppression, and owing to its being concealed by the postures, Iriyapatha. When the postures are exposed, Ukkhatitta, by keeping in mind continual oppression, the characteristic of pain appears in accordance with its true essential nature.
Nothing about change of posture.
But they say the meditation teacher said that by changing posture, one cannot see. It's like changing covers up, conceal the dukkha. But actually the posture itself, because it's the whole posture which conceal the arising and falling away of realities.
I still have some problem with why they mention bother about postures at all.
Why postures rather than objects?
Because usually one clings to the body.
Okay.
Yeah. One thing all the time, even there is no body at all, one still thinks that now I'm sitting and talking.
And it's the body that helps.
The body is beautiful, the body is mind.
Because in the plane of five khandhas, there is the body which one clings or takes for I.
Right. I might relate to the vipalasa then, the four vipalasa also. What's to do with the body, there's taking the what is ugly for what is beautiful, and that's to do with the body, isn't it, also, yeah. Okay. Oh, that's starting to get a bit little bit clearer.
Not only the body for the vipalasa.
No.
Whatever is nice.
But taking
it for something.
Oh, whatever is nice, taking the ugly for the beautiful.
Say that the posture conceals dukkha. They will say that the changing posture.
Yes, they do. Yes.
Otherwise, they have to agree that the posture itself, the whole posture, conceals the arising and falling away.
Right. Yeah. That's right.
So this is why they try to hold the posture for them.
Yes. So this is a big part of the evidence.
Samoha vinutani, vipatana vipa.
Samoha vinindini, classification of the ayatana.
So the sub-commentary of Visuddhimagga.
Yes, there's also something in
Paramattha Manjusa.
Yeah. What does the Paramattha Manjusa say? Do they
the same.
Say,
The posture, not the changing of the posture.
Oh, really?
Because it seems like the changing of posture concealed, but actually the posture itself. One should lose opportunity or the benefit of having awareness by such thoughts that it's impossible to have awareness now.
Because if they believe you can't have awareness, then they won't make
it. But what is their reason? They have to wait because life exists only in a moment. Next moment hasn't come yet. The previous one has completely gone. What about the understanding of this moment? And without awareness, how can right understanding understand?
I think they have the idea that it has to be a sort of continual awareness. Not continual, but the more you compact awareness into a shorter space of time and have a lot of it in a over a few days or a month or something, that somehow it builds up momentum, whereas having moments in daily life, there's not enough momentum built up. It's he would give the example of, it's like starting a fire with a stick. You have to do the stick very fast for a long period, but if you keep starting it and then stopping and starting again, you never get the fireball. That's the example he uses.
And what does a fire mean?
Well, a fire in his case means, I don't know, Pasminyana, I guess.
If there is no right understanding now, can there be Vipassanayana then?
Oh, no. Mm-hmm. But that's one of the ideas that they have, that one of the analogies they use to support why they think you should be in a meditation center practicing continually without any daily life distractions and so forth.
They also have the idea that you have to start with the idea of control, and then later one can understand the non-control or anattaness. They don't understand it. It has to start off right in the beginning. Fear of death followed by useful reflection.
Fear of having a bad rebirth.
Fear of rebirth followed by perhaps some useful reflection, and the question is whether the fear, one could say in some ways, is useful because perhaps it was a condition for the useful reflection that follows.
It depends on what you mean by fear.
A kind of dosa.
Dosa cannot condition kusala vipaka.
What about being a condition by
understanding about this?
Some people would say, well, if there hadn't been the fear, then they wouldn't have had the useful reflection that followed.
It depends on what they mean by fear again.
Fear kind of does.
Yeah.
And also depend on what you mean by condition. Because we know that things condition things in many different ways. So.
My point is mainly that thinking about future states, sometimes there is fear, meaning dosa, and you might as well take advantage of that fear because it's already arisen and use it as a sort of a warning. Fear means there's a strong sense of self because that fear is conditioned by a strong sense of self, so it's time to develop more understandings and you can see past that wrong view that conditions the fear. So the fear can be like a useful warning, something that there's still a lot of clinging to self.
Well, if anything can be a reminder, actually, if one considers it in the right way.
Yeah. Told me to have a lot of fear about rebirth. I would say to them, well, you only study the Dharma more than, you know, just...
I know, the other is, well, someone may have a lot of fear of rebirth, and as a result may give to the monks, perform some act of kusala, but actually it was the fear that initially motivated it. But one might say, oh, if there hadn't been the fear, there wouldn't have been the generosity.
It is the upanisaya paccaya, and kusala can condition kusala.
But also, it's not the only condition. There's other conditions that, like prior understanding and hearing the Dharma before and so forth.
Conditions or motivates that kusala? Does it matter? It's only one for the generous deed. Does it matter?
It depends on the individual, who can tell. Yeah, people have different ideas.
Teaches that by means of impermanent, or by means of suffering, or by means of both impermanent and suffering. Should anyone assert that, herein in the following sutta passage, should anyone assert that the I is self, it would be untenable. The arising and passing away of the I are obvious. But since its arising and passing away are obvious, you would have to conclude that myself arises and passes away. Therefore it is untenable. Therefore the I is no self. And that's my impermanence. In the following sutta passage, he taught the characteristic of no self by suffering. Materiality bhikkhus is not the self. If materiality bhikkhus were the self, this materiality would not lead to sickness. And one would say of materiality, let my material form be thus. Let my material form not be thus. But because bhikkhus materiality is not the self, therefore materiality leads to sickness. and one cannot say of materiality, let my material form be thus, let my material form not be thus. In such passages as materiality because it's impermanent, what is impermanent is painful, what is painful is not self. What is not self, that is not mine, that I am not, that is not myself. He taught the characteristic of no self by means of both the impermanent and suffering. Why? Because of the obviousness of impermanence and suffering. The characteristic of no self is unobvious, dark, unclear, difficult to penetrate, difficult to illustrate, difficult to make known. The characteristics of impermanence of pain are made known with or without the arising of the Tathagatas. But the characteristic of no self is not made known without the arising of the enlightened ones. It is made known only on the arising of the enlightened ones. The making known of the characteristic of no self is not the province of anyone else, it is the province of the fully enlightened ones only. Thus, this characteristic of no self is unobvious. That is why the Master, when teaching the characteristic of no self, taught it by means of impermanence, or by means of pain, or by means of both impermanence and pain. When we're looking at not self, or discussing not self, or discussing nama and rupa, or anything to do with not self, we're discussing getting to the heart of Buddhism. First jhana, they're talking about the moment when nibbana is first attained. In the first jhana, I think even for a dry vipassana worker, pure vipassana worker, it's considered that they attain first jhana at the moment of nibbana. The samadhi at that moment of penetrating nibbana is equivalent to first jhana or something.
There's a fact that you'll find interesting, Robert, talking about Meggy and all his unwholesome thoughts, and it's talking about a thought connected with sense desires is one opposed to renunciation that occurs by way of rejoicing in sense desires. So not only is it rejoicing in sense desires, but that moment is opposed to renunciation. A thought connected with ill will, one opposed to loving kindness, that occurs by way of utter depravity, where other people, beings are concerned.
It's rather critical, isn't it?
It's very strong, isn't it? So not only when one has a bad thought about someone, not only is there a lack of better, but it's like
utter depravity.
Very strong.
One's in a Mahaparinibbana Sutta, where his last meal by Mr. Chunda was soft pork, although some scholars translate that as soft truffles liked by pigs, but I can't see it. It seems like pork to me. Another one is the Buddha disallowed Devadatta's request
to
for all monks to be vegetarian? He said no. Another one, I don't know the sutta, but one monk was due to become enlightened, and another monk asked him what he would like to eat on that day, what was very suitable for his health. And the monk said fish is what makes his body feel relaxed, and they went and got him fish. Anyway, that's all I can remember.
The one that was mentioned about the cutting off the slice of the leg.
Oh, that's right.
The sick monk needed a meat broth to heal him. So the woman couldn't find any meat, so she cut off a piece of her leg.
And then had the rule about
the Buddha, they just had a rule, you're not allowed to eat human flesh.
Amakanda Sutta. It means the bad smell, and people think that flesh or meat has bad smell, but Buddha taught that what are bad smells? All the akusala, dhamma,
akusala
deeds, yeah.
So is anyone eating meat, or but because he talks about meat not having a bad smell, this is the implication?
Anyone who has a kusala citta at that moment, it's bad smell of the citta.
Oh, and I think there's another one, is General Sihar, I think, was offered the Buddha or the Buddha's disciples some meat after he was a Sotapanna. General Sihar was a Sotapanna, I think, and before that he was associated with the naked ascetics, Nikanta, but and the Nikanta went around telling everyone that General Sihar is slaughtering animals to feed the monks. In fact, he wasn't killing animals, even though he had offered meat. He wasn't killing any animals. It was just meat that he had bought somewhere.
Nisya Pachya.
Not Nisya.
Didn't
think it was
like Pachya.
Yeah.
And
open it,
right? Nisya
and then open.
Buddha and what he attained and what he
you
did.
You take that for Buddha?
No. I don't know.
That's a question.
So who then?
The fact that so many people must have had this great faith in the Buddha, and that, you know, because of the Buddha's virtues, these people had this great faith. And I just found it more inspiring. But these days I don't know why. It's more churchy. I'm afraid.
Well, I appreciate seeing a Buddha image, whether it's a beautiful statue or whatever, when it acts as a reminder or as a condition to appreciate the teaching. It might just be a small image or whatever.
It's just the big ones don't
know
anything.
But it doesn't always have that effect. There's not always a stimulation for that kind of thinking. I forget where it was. We saw one not so long ago, but I think it was in Hong Kong somewhere. Yes, it was. There was a small Chinese temple. And among all the garishness, and there might have been one or two Buddha images there, but on the side of a white wall, there was painted a very crude depiction of a reclining Buddha. The garishness of the Chinese temple can be a bit off-putting sometimes, but seeing this simple depiction of a reclining Buddha was a condition for some useful thinking.
Some useful
reflection on the value of the Buddha's teaching, the Dhamma.
The reclining one.
But not because it was reclining, simply because I had taken notice of a Buddha image at some time.
A very large one near my house in Tokyo. The bronze Buddha. Sometimes when I go for a run, I sometimes make sure that I run near there and so I can go and have a look, but it doesn't seem to make any difference.
Sometimes if it's somewhere that's in a very kind of crowded, busy place, then it's just nothing. But if it's somewhere that's quiet, then maybe condition for reflection on the virtues of the Buddha.
Coming back on this drive, we passed more than one, I think, large, rather beautiful looking Buddha image up in the hills.
No, I have before on this trip. How did you feel?
Cho-cho.
Don't you think that because of your sadhana that you felt like that?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And later on, because of panya?
I felt chay chay.
Understanding more that is not Buddha, that's right. Not Buddha. Yeah. Yeah. Impossible.
And it doesn't matter whether it looks pretty or not.
Yes, I think so. More sadhana in the beginning.
Because people take that for the real Buddha, showing respect to him, not for his virtues.
Like he's watching
because
him.
They don't understand the virtues at all. They just believe that he is the one who's so wise or who can help sometimes. But there couldn't be that face, that arm, or that face. It's just a sign for reminding about how virtues he has, so that we could follow his teaching whenever we see one. But that's not Buddha, that's not Buddha. Impossible.
Oh, I never thought it was Buddha.
He's not like that. He didn't look like that.
Oh.
Never be like that.
Now, for some reason, I've never been particularly inspired by Buddha image.
I've never been through the stage of that.
You know that I pay respect each morning and night to the statue.
Yeah.
I mean the image that I have.
Even now?
Even now today, because I clean the shelf and then pay respect. But I know that that is not Buddha. Was not like that.
Why do you pay respect then?
To him, not to that. But since that represent.
It's a reminder.
Yeah, as a reminder.
But he's long past. Why do you?
Yeah. Why not? Because who taught us all this understanding of realities?
Why do you need to do that though? Why not just?
One can feel gratitude.
But one can feel gratitude and not do that.
Yes, but how can you show your gratitude?
Just by developing your understanding.
And?
It's enough developing your
and
sila,
showing respect to. At the right time. Because when we say the word Namo Tassa Bhagavato, we do like this too.
That's true.
Yeah, to show respect.
Is it more respectful to show respect at somewhere where the relics are kept?
Pardon? Yes.
Is that better than doing it at home?
Any time when you feel like that.
It just depends on the chitta. It doesn't depend on whether it's a special image or whether the relics are there or not.
Yeah.
You think the result
would be higher if you paid respect? Could there be any difference in the chitta if you were paying respect when there's a relic?
Whether it's different or not. For example, when I went to India, each time, and the relic was shown.
Yeah.
I really didn't see, didn't look. I just think of the virtues each time. So I couldn't tell which one and how does the relic look like. Yeah. Brown or small. Or it's not in my mind at all.
Okay.
Until
it's
now.
Just the,
until
it's
now.
Just the chitta with respect.
Yeah. And at the Delhi Museum, there is the other pieces of relics, and some people think that, oh, this is the true one, and that is not the true one. To me, it doesn't mean anything whether this is true or that is not true, because who can tell? Who can tell?
It doesn't affect the cheetah in a sense anyway, does it? The
and who can tell whether what's the right one, the true one, the real one?
Understanding that can't be affected by whether it's in front of a, you're paying respect to a relic or it's not a real relic, it can't matter.
I was given the relic too, but I don't know. I it's not in my mind whether it's the real one or not,
no.
But I still pay respect and keep it in the right place.
How did you feel when you were in front of the relics? Is the chitta different than when you're at home paying respect?
Very humble.
Is that more humble than when you're at home paying respect to the Buddha?
I cannot tell, because usually I don't pay respect many times.
Okay.
Only on the occasion when I see the relics.
Yeah, I think that's how I used to feel in front of a Buddha image. Very, very, very humble, sort of very in awe of great knowledge of the Buddha.
How about recitation of Namo Tassa or something like that? Is that also an aspect of seeing?
Mm-hmm. Through body.
Body.
Through speech.
If it's not one's own language, then it's no good just reciting. It's just recited without thinking of the meaning.
But you know the Pali term that it is for showing respect. Of building Buddha's image, it depends on the motive, whether that person would like people to have just satta or faith or wrong faith. Or you want to have more understanding.
Certainly they've got quite a few Buddha images in Japan, but it doesn't. These days they're just seen as some, it's some, all it's seen as is just some sort of strange historical figure really. Nothing to do with anything, nothing to do with Kusala Chitta anymore. Something the old people liked 500 years ago, sort of, that's the way it's seen.
We think, oh, this is a very nice one because it's old and beautifully carved, and this one is very garish. But now it doesn't make much. It doesn't make any difference. I'm not particularly.
The aesthetics of it.
Sorry.
The aesthetics of it don't come into it so much.
No. If I go in and I contemplate or consider, it doesn't matter so much what kind of image it is.
But to see, say, the jetty in the corn. Nakhon Pathom, the very old jetty there, the tall one.
The first jetty.
The first jetty. I might have some
someone,
feeling.
Someone.
Some feeling anyway,
One can be conditioned for reminding the virtues, if there are conditions for reminding. Otherwise, it's just that, no matter it's jetty or the Buddha statue. People have different accumulations.
I think I like a story behind it, behind a statue or a jetty these days. Like, I know the one in the Nakhon Pathom is supposed to have been originally the first one, but now they've got another one being built over top of it, sort of improved. But originally the first one was sent out by, missionaries were sent out by King Asoka. So we're talking 2,200 years ago. Possibly that first one was begun. Yeah, and with relics of Arahato and so forth. And
we cannot find the relic there.
You know, and I don't know if it's true or not, but there is. So I have a certain feeling for that one, yeah.
Even the compound, I felt very calm and think of the virtues instantly. Even the drum struck for offerings.
You like that?
Yeah.
No, I think for me to condition, because there has to be
it's your confidence in the teachings.
Yes.
Yeah. They try to do everything to show the respect.
I've been to the Temple of the Tooth, but there was nothing happening when I was there, and it was very hot, so I only stood for about 15 minutes. But I've read about the ceremony.
Or in the evening or morning? At noon?
Just about lunchtime or something like that, yeah.
No.
I went to the BPS, the Book Society, first, and then I walked back. And I was a bit tired and hot, so I didn't linger for long.
It's exciting for me because I know that the real relic is kept there. Yeah.
But
I could remember and I didn't really see. Again and again, I didn't know why. I would like to put it close to me and look, otherwise nowhere to see the evidence, the rupa.
How are you so confident that this is the real religion?
The relics must be in this world, and that could be the real one because of the... I think that there is no other place.
Number one contender.
And maybe some in the Tuparama that we can't see but are there.
Yeah, it's inside.
Yes,
even
it's inside.
In Bangkok at the what you call Golden Mountain.
Yes, there's supposed to be some in the Golden Mountain.
Yeah.
I'm not so certain whether those are really
sent to Sri Lanka, or how was it meant to be sent to
Ranking Ashoka?
Presented to
And Sankamitra There brought it.
Along with the sapling.
With the sapling.